Hi, welcome to the Lift Podcast, where we talk faith, family, and fitness. I'm your host, Erica Irvin. Join us for another exciting episode where we seek to edify, encourage, and inspire the next generation of women. See you inside. Welcome, everybody. I just want to let you guys know that you guys were missed. I'm really excited to have you guys on the show, and I'm glad that you guys tuned in today. You joined at a very special time. Guess what? Today is our 10th show anniversary, and listen, the real reason that we came here is our special guest, who has so much wisdom to share during our last conversation that I figured I'd have to have him say it on a podcast and present it to you guys. I want to welcome one of my first mentors in my life. Next to my mother, my father, there was always that other figure there that was my coach. He was my basketball mentor, my tracks mentor. He taught me everything I needed to know about sports. He started me on the track of running, and most people don't know that, but his name is Thomas Yan, and I want to welcome Thomas Yan to the show. Just a little history about him, just so that you guys are aware. Thomas Yan grew up in the Bronx, and he graduated from Hayes High School in 82. He went on to Penn State University from 82 to 88, I believe. And then you went to Penn State University from 82 to 88. From there, you played with the Nittany Lions, and you were also known as, I was reading on one of the interviews that you did, you were also known as Hayes Flash, which I thought that was pretty awesome. In 1986, you helped the Nittany Lions to a 12-0 season. You were the running back who fulfilled your father's dream, which is my grandfather, Dada, by making it to the NFL, and you still work in your old neighborhood. Welcome to the show, Uncle Thomas. I really thank you for taking the time out of your schedule to do this. I know you're running up and down the highway, going from Penn State University. Yes, so tell us a bit about yourself. Welcome, and please share a little bit about yourself, Uncle Thomas.
Okay, thank you for having me, Erica. I really appreciate it, and I like the fact that you're still doing positive work, and, you know, you raised a great, beautiful family. I'm very proud of you. I wanted to lay that out first. Basically, the foundation of who I am comes from my father, his father, my mother, and my grandparents. They laid a foundation of excellence, high expectations, and always strive to do the best that you can do, no matter what the situation may be. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much the foundation of who I am. Mm-hmm. And in the third grade, I had an experience with a teacher that wasn't positive. Mm-hmm. And I told the teacher that I'm going to grow up and become a teacher, and I'm going to treat the students better than what you've done. Mm-hmm. I might have been a little fresh when I said that, but I spoke from the heart. So that helped to shape who I am today, where I have high expectations of everyone around me, parents, students, and teachers alike. So I strive to be a professional athlete, and I was involved in sports at a very young age. I don't know if folks remember Jack LaLanne, but I used to watch Jack LaLanne, who was a fitness coach. Okay. That I used to watch on television. So I started doing the exercises, and my father noticed that I was up in the morning working out. He said, son, what are you doing? I said, I'm following the routines of Jack LaLanne, Dad. He said, wow. He said, did you know your dad was a track star? I said, no, I didn't even know what a track star was. So he broke it down to me. Next thing you know, I'm following in my dad's footsteps. He became my hero.
Wow.
My father went to Cardinal Hayes High School in the Bronx. I went to Cardinal Hayes High School in the Bronx. He won city championships in track and field. I won city championships in track and field. The respect that I had for the man was so tremendous until he dreamed things together and we made dreams become a reality. And I think that's the difference that we have to make, is we have to make dreams transfer into reality instead of dreams being deferred.
It's so good. Yes, I now I understand a lot more, because when I was growing up, you were actually my track coach and basketball coach. And so that, thinking back on that, that was the start of me running And then I joined the Marine Corps and I was able to run. And I kind of fell off of running for a while. And then when I got to Washington, D.C., my running was rekindled. Just had a lot going on during that time. And I started running again. And this time I was running like 7 miles. You know, wow. So thank you for that.
Well, you're quite welcome. Thank you for continuing.
Yes, okay. Yes. So my question is, I want to ask, why a principal? And you talked about your childhood and you talked about the third grade and your experience with that teacher. Tell me how you got to this road of becoming a principal. Matter of fact, a principal in New York.
Okay. There was a principal at my middle school by the name of John L. Crawford. Mr. Crawford was notorious for being fair, but yet firm. Mr. Crawford would make an announcement on a loudspeaker. I am leaving the building for 2 hours. When I come back, I expect for everything to be in order. When he made that announcement, it made you look out for your P's and Q's because you did not want to disappoint Mr. Crawford. He was 6'6", an African-American male who played for the old St. Louis Hawks, which became the Atlanta Hawks. So not only was Mr. Crawford an educator, but he was a former professional athlete as well. So Crawford told me, he said, Tommy, John, he said, when I retire from here, I expect you to take this chair. So that inspired me to become an administrator.
Okay. Wow. This is really good to know. And so what is your driving force as a principal? And I want to preface that with doing some research. When you interviewed in 1996 with the New York Times writer Vincent Malazzi, I believe his name is, you said, my driving force is to try to make a difference. And then you went on to say, what I do is invaluable as compared to the money that I once made playing pro ball. What is your driving force now? Has it changed?
The way it is right now. Pandemic that we are right now makes a captive audience. It shows that my work still not been done. My driving force is to enlighten students, parents, teachers, and the community that systemic racism still exists, and we cannot have Dr. King's dream become a continuing dream. We need for the dream to become a reality that all people are created equal. In our Constitution, we had the Declaration of Independence, all people to be created equal, and then we had the Emancipation Proclamation, and it still has not relieved us from the bondage and the inequities that exist in society today with blacks, minorities, and low-income families.
And I get a lot of people that will ask, you know, because at this time, you know, when we're talking about the systematic racism, a lot of people don't understand what it means. They don't understand. And they'll ask, what exactly does that mean when people say systematic racism? What is that? What can you explain that and just kind of go a little bit into that? And we'll go into our next question.
Okay. Systematic means that things that's happening automatically and is part of the system in the way that things work. To make it clearer for America, the American country, the United States of America, was founded and developed on the backs of blacks, slaves, okay? And the way the system is designed is a built-in force to keep blacks suppressed and to keep blacks down so they would never, ever be able to achieve as a group of people that our counterparts achieve. And blacks have to climb an uphill battle. The few that break through and become very successful, it's few too, it's not enough. We have so many situations where we were achieving, where we were thriving, or they got upset and they burned down communities. There are several examples of that. One of the most outstanding ones was in Tulsa, Oklahoma in 1921, where whites came in and burned down what was called at that time the Black Wall Street. And the only reason that that situation is memorialized and the others are not is because there was a that happened, uprisings in Kansas, California. If you look at your history, you'll be able to see that those uprisings where they overtook the black community has not been memorialized because of the lack of remorse there.
Okay. Okay. Awesome. That's good information. I really appreciate that. There's a lot of things that we don't know that are hidden. Like, I didn't know in 1920 that in Oklahoma it was that type of situation. I would definitely go back and do some more research on that for my own personal education. But my next question would be, what changes have you seen over the years as in students and in teachers as a principal?
Well, some of the changes that I've seen in students is that a lot of the students are much more aware of what's going on around them. They're brighter, they want to be independent faster, they have access to quite a bit of information instantaneously with technology and the use of the internet. And a lot of students are not going to, I'm going to use the term, bow down to what the adults tell them to do.
Right.
They grow up a lot faster. It's almost like it became cyclical, because when my mother was a young teen, they were more mature than what we were. And it seems like that situation is coming back again, where you have a lot of the youth that are more mature once again. Where, my mother was married when she was 16. My dad was 18. And I said, how could you do that? They said it was a different level of maturity, and we had more responsibility of making sure that we were independent and able to function for ourselves earlier.
Right.
And that same thing has come back again. A lot of kids are leaving the homes early. Once they go to college, they're never coming back. But due to the pandemic, that may change things, because the job opportunities are kind of scarce right now with the way of, things are.
Yes.
Health and safety first, of course.
Right. And what about teachers? Have you seen a difference in teachers over the years?
I've been overburdened with a lot of paperwork. There's a lot more responsibilities for teachers to handle. The certification are a lot stronger. And I feel awful, for teachers at this time that are preparing to go back to work in this pandemic. Everything right now to me is under a magnifying glass. And I think it's a terrible thing that teachers have so many responsibilities, and also they have to transition to go back into an environment that is uncertain as far as health is concerned.
Now, that's very true. They were talking a lot about that on the news, about some teachers not feeling comfortable with going back to work in this situation. And I know that in the classrooms, teachers kind of experience a different side of our children. So I have two that young adults that just graduated. Thank God they graduated.
And
yes. And I understand you have some graduates as well. So I'm kind of looking back on my situation, like, teachers experience a different side of our children than we do at home. It takes faith for both parties to enter into the situation of sending our kids to school. It takes faith for us as parents to trust educators to handle our children and take responsibility for our children. And then it takes faith for the teachers, and trust for the teachers to go in and pray that things are safe. I've heard different things about, schools and classrooms that, sometimes the teachers are not safe when they go into those environments. And so it takes faith on both parts, I think, when we're dealing with, our children.
I agree, but I don't look at it just as both parts. I look at education as a triangular relationship. One third from the student, one third from the parent, and one third from the school/teacher. If everybody pulls their third, then we should have the opportunity for a successful educational situation and a successful educational environment.
That's good. That's good.
And right now, the parents, especially when the pandemic first hit us, when we all transitioned to remote learning, the parents got the opportunity to really see how difficult it is for teachers to teach. Because now parents had to shift some of that role, some of that one third, from the teacher over to them. So the parents were doing more like 50%, because they were home with their child. 20 minutes and every Tuesday, every day.
Wow. Yeah, you're right. Because we got to know our children a whole lot better during the coronavirus.
Yeah. I've gotten phone calls from parents. Please, take him back. He's too much for me.
Wow, that's so funny. But I can imagine. I mean, you know, we always get a little hurt about, you know, we get that phone call from the teacher about our child did something. And it's like, well, you know, we always try to defend. I know we all try to defend and, you know, but it takes things like this for us to develop a more aware relationship when it comes to our children. So
I think the parents has the most important role, and part of that one third is to make sure the communication is good.
Yeah, you're right, because there's no communication.
The parent is the moral compass of education in the school system.
You said parents are the moral compass of the school system and education.
That's right.
That's rich, man. I'm telling you, that's a tweetable moment right there. That's good. That's really good. I'm arresting that one, because that's rich. And this is hard, you know, as parents, you know, we don't see, like, I can look back on my daughter and know that, you know, realize that there was a lot of things that, you know, she was dealing with, and then we had to maneuver through that stuff. And, you know, it doesn't always go, you know, some things don't always go as we expected. And, you know, with Michael, it was always, you know, different things that we had to maneuver with him on. But we are, yes, you are so right. We are the moral compass of education and learning. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Now, I
want to talk about this, because I know right now we've got a lot of things going on. We've got Black Lives Matter. We've got the coronavirus. And a lot of this corona, this Black Lives Matter is hurtful, you know, to sit back and watch. But then, you know, other parts of me is like, man, how do we talk about this? Like, as an administrator, how do you discuss this to your students in the South Bronx? Because what I'm seeing is a lot of the conduct in some states, it's not peaceful. But how do you talk to the children about this and the students about this in school?
Right. As the dean of students and an educator, it's very, very important for every school to have an equity for all team in your building that incorporates parents, teachers, administrators, students, guidance counselors, and a parent coordinator to coordinate the information between parents, the school, and the community.
So you guys have a
team like this. I'm sorry, go ahead, Dalton.
I'm sorry, you have a parent coordinator?
Yeah, that's pretty much the standard in New York City. Every school has a parent coordinator. It's a new position that came out in about 1998, and it's been instituted for years now, where they're like the gatekeeper. And I think a parent coordinator's position from there is easy to transition into becoming an activist, a community activist, that can make a lot of difference in the individual community and where the parent coordinator comes from.
Wow. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, you didn't interrupt. You know, it was all beautiful dialogue. And by the way, I miss talking to you, so it's so lovely to hear your voice.
Oh, thank you. I miss you too, Uncle. I really do.
Right. You turn out a fantastic young lady. Or I should say woman, with your beautiful family. I'm so proud of you. I had to throw that in there.
Yay. Thank you.
You're quite welcome.
Thank you so much for tuning into our podcast today. I am so honored to have you as my special guest. Listeners like you make this podcast possible, and we look forward to meeting up with you again soon. As we continue to celebrate our 10th of many episodes, stay tuned for future blogs and announcements as we speak gems and needed wisdom into your life. For more information, blogs, and podcasts, visit us at our website at liftwomensdevotions.blog. That's liftwomensdevotions.blog. Until next time.